I've gone to my Spotify account because I do pay for Spotify for music, and I have noticed that we get the odd comment, but I never get an email about the comment, so if I don't log in, I don't know what's there.
I see. Oh, I had been more engaged with it. I had monetized it and everything. And as soon as it started to blow up, my arch enemy, Goldfinch, had actually filed a fraudulent copyright strike. And I tried and I fought with them over it. And they just said, no, we don't believe it's you. Like they basically denied me rights to my podcast for more than a year. And they recently backed off of it for no reason. And I asked them, give me a copy of the false DMCA copyright strike that I'm legally entitled to, and they ignored me. So there's something fishy going on, but business as usual. But I'm just glad to be back on because I've been disconnected from thousands of people who thought that I went dark a year ago. So it's likely we're going to see a lot of people rolling in the next few days and weeks who have been out of the loop.
So you have to log. So you're saying I never log into Spotify because on my phone it's always logged in, but you have to log in there. And then what do you have to do special to make sure you're there or you're monetized? I've never investigated that.
Well, when you log in, and if you have a certain amount of engagement, they allow you to record ads. I don't really bother with the ads, but for the most part, it's just a matter of logging in and looking at the analytics. And if you're open to other subscriptions or ads, they let you know. And then, of course, through there, it's like a hub, and then you can have your feed put to other platforms as well. And my thing with Spotify, of course, is simply that it had a bigger following than any of my other channels, and it was feeding into things like Apple and iTunes and Odyssey. And it was just kind of a disappointment when they pulled the plug on it, but they fixed it. So I'm just really about dispersing the material as far and wide as possible to avoid the censorship, which isn't going to stop.
No, it's not. Okay, I'll look into that because my main hub is my blog, fakeologist.com/blog. That's where all my feeds come from. That's where all my audios are stored. So I know that Spotify grabs the feed from there and then feeds it to whoever's on Spotify. I didn't think people were on Spotify listening to podcasts, but I know they spent billions of dollars promoting their podcast area. But I didn't know it was a big thing other than music.
I was surprised when I looked at the analytics to find out that I was getting like 50% of my traffic from, Apple Podcasts. And so like it shows you where to focus. And I was just noticing these trends and it was blowing up out of nowhere. And I had 760 podcasts recorded across the entire thing and they were all generating traffic. And so when that was pulled, all that was cut off, but I'm bringing it back on and I'm probably going to be also, reaching back into the archives, we've been doing this for a long time, and I want to make sure that we're replaying things from years ago that are still, relevant. And, we're out here on the fringe, far out on the fringe, and not everyone has been along from the beginning of when we started really looking at how fake everything is. And sometimes you have to go back, I think, and kind of revisit things for noobs.
Okay, so I see where we are paired tonight, which is great. I'm looking in the chat, so I'll put the overlay up on my screen. And we've got quite a few people here. We got Pete Trippa, Diana South. You have your regulars, of course. I recognize all the names from when you call them out. Zinvalis, Napoleon Wilson's from my side. We've got from your side many more. Osher, Kevin Morling, Benton, Penguin Doctor, Echo Charlie, Mango. Well, you've got quite the crowd. The penguins, as you call them.
Hey, and it's the 3-3, the date today. Very interesting date. This is the 33rd anniversary of the Rodney King beating, where he was whacked 33 times over the course of 1 minute and 19 seconds.
If I went to IPS Monster, it looks like it took me to your Substack. Is that correct?
Yeah, I use the Substack as an organizational hub because it's a brilliant, easy to use platform, well integrated and growing in a lot of
Okay.
ways. And it's been attacked by the media because it's a free speech platform, but I have a lot of confidence in it for the most part, and it's doing its job superbly. I get great traffic, a lot of new people who have never been exposed to auto hoaxology or any of this media breakdown at this level are jumping on board. So I'm having a good experience with Substack.
So that's where you've moved your main hub to by
Yeah.
rerouting. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I So far, this has been the best solution overall, and I've been with them since the beginning, and I've been observing their developments and improvements. And they have a lot of, again, features, makes it easy to paywall. I do get, so I'm like, I'm getting people either to Patreon or the Substack. They're compatible, and I'm going to basically stick with both in case they ever pull the plug on Patreon, which is a distinct possibility. Yeah. As you'll know, we all know, I mean, this is like not new that these platforms are basically trying to root out people making money off of mail, miss, and disinformation.
Now, what cut does Substack take of any subscription?
You know, I'll have to look into that and get back to you on it. Okay. But whatever they take, they allow you to upload videos, which is nice. You have your RSS feed, and you can organize it like a website, like any other content management system, like a WordPress or something.
Yeah.
But it's also, I think, also very much specifically designed for iPhones and smartphones. And people get your newsletters. They can click and either listen to it as an MP3, as in it'll read by the articles. So I've been getting just so much engagement compared to WordPress that I decided I'm just going to put all my focus on Substack.
Why is that? Why do you think that works better? I'd really like to know why these platforms, how do they work better? Because it's literally just a website. So how do they get you more traffic?
You know, I'm wondering here if there's some kind of competition or something going on, because I used to rely on WordPress and it was integrated with Twitter.
All right.
Well, then Twitter, and you could just write an article and post it, and it would break your long article into a thread. And it was getting me a lot of traffic that way. And then when Musk bought it, he terminated all of the integrations with WordPress. And so I just kind of like, it kind of feels like some of these newer platforms are just taking over that space and more people use them and they're more integrated with the new sites. And also with Substack, you have all these features that you don't have to pay for. Mm-hmm. Whereas WordPress, you have to pay for every nice feature. And even then, most of the time, they just deal very, it's a very clunky site, however they make it look. And
yeah,
it's always guesswork as to whether it's going to be fine with phones. And so I'm very happy with, so far, Substack. And I don't think they're going to be able to shut it down. I've seen a lot of attempts from leftist media to brand it as, you know, basically a haven for e-Nazis, like they do with everything they don't like. But so far, no, it's actually improving.
Okay, we are taking calls tonight. I have phone lines open. My phone lines are working quite well right now. So 810-666-1984, 902-400-1984. And you do get an answering service now, so just hang on there. You don't have to let the phone ring anymore. And when there's a second call hanging out behind the call that's online, I will see it. So I will know when there are other people trying to bust through. So you guys can call if you got any questions. Have you taken you have taken phone calls lately? You're back on the phones?
Yes, I'm primarily going to reserve evenings for phones and mornings for data dump. But yeah, I'm definitely aiming for more phone calls, and the ones we've had recently have been interesting. And there's just like, there's too many people out there, too many voices to exclude. So I'm also looking at integrating Discord chats into the post-morning show, because there are people who don't call or won't call, but they'll use Discord chat. And the other day we had more than a couple dozen people in there and a few voices. So those recordings will be showing up as well. So if anybody just wants to be in any kind of a panel-like discussion or conversation, we'll be doing these things mornings over at the infiniteplanesociety.com or ips.monster.
Okay. So yeah, your Discord is reachable through your Substack or ips.monster.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Is that free to join?
Yes. Just click and you're in. And the rules are pretty much simple. If somebody breaks any kind of rule as far as like bannable content, I just put a 24-hour ban. I don't think we'll have repeat offenders, but we have to kind of keep an eye on Discord, because Discord's one of those platforms that it's been scapegoated by the mass media. That's where shooters come from these days. And they make it very easy with their new rules to terminate it. Like they're coming up with excuses, you know, new excuses all the time to pull the plug on Discord, but we're playing it safe.
Okay. I think I'm in your latest Discord, as far as I know, because I know it does get changed. But we've been pretty good with Fakeologist Discord. It hasn't gone down for quite a while. What about yours?
I have neglected it, to be honest. I've neglected it for months, and I just jumped back in and made it streamlined specifically for these live chats and these voice chats. So, yeah, I think it's going to be fine. I mean, it's a remarkably easy to use platform, and that's probably why it was targeted with so many bad actors, just basically sabotaging from within.
And very popular. Is it just because it's easy to use? It's colorful, works on your phone for the most part. Do you think that's what attracts people to it?
Oh yeah, I mean these gaming platforms use these gamers to really optimize their platforms, and then we're able to just take advantage of it once they've built it.
I'm going to highlight the Discord now in the shared window here so people can see what I'm talking about. So this is the IPS Discord right here. And you've got a couple rooms. So when you do your chats, you do you record them and post them later?
Yes, exactly. And I use my OBS to record, or I'll use CrakeBot, although I prefer using OBS because it's so simple and then it exports the right file and I'm going to upload it. And so it's going to be a daily thing, which means twice as much content. You'll have live streams at night and then the morning plus whatever conversations we have with whoever happens to jump in.
Okay, so you just stream your screen on OBS to your usual platforms.
Exactly.
Do you stream OBS to Restream? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, exactly. I plug in my Restream
Right.
and that's how I generally do it. And it's served very well. I mean, there's nothing wrong. I mean, OBS, my setup could be a little more flashy. It's very minimalistic, but I'm going to put a little more time into it probably here in the next few days.
Okay.
It's always a work in progress.
Yeah, you are always pushing technology. That I learn a lot from what you're trying to do. So you always seem to be doing something new technologically.
I'm staying cutting edge. Did you see the artwork I sent out in the newsletter slash live stream notification with the penguin and the wizard?
Okay, I probably did. I probably did, but okay.
I mean, I've been making use of AI generative art and also the Claude AI is one of my favorite for really any kind of written work. But that's why I use the penguin cyborg. We've always had the penguin with a wrench, but the cyborg aspect really represents augmenting with all these new technologies, staying cutting edge. The concept here is the penguins have reached the singularity before humans and have taken over their own evolution. And that's kind of where we're at, because we are more or less going beyond where trutherism has traditionally restrained itself. And by calling things out the level that we do, we kind of get alienated. But I see this as we're not the cutting, I mean, we're not like the fringe or the outsiders, but we really are the cutting edge. And they may laugh or hate now, but the fact is, we're right. We've been right this entire time. I mean, have you found yourself to be wrong about any major thing that you've assessed since you've been doing this?
I don't think so. I haven't really reversed course too many times. So I think we're on the right track. I've got some artwork here. Is this AI? Can you see this?
Yes, just
Oh,
prompted.
it's so clear. It's amazing how clear it is. So this is AI. How long does it take to make this?
A few seconds. I just say something
Wow.
like, I need an image of armored penguins on a high-tech tank going through an underground tunnel chasing down genetically modified rats in the
Good
style
God.
of a graphic novel. And if you say in the style of graphic novel, pixel art, video game, realistic, it'll do any of the above that quick.
It's crazy clear too. Is this gonna kill the artist, the art world, the or are they gonna just try to use this to
It's a good
make
question.
art?
There was an outrage here when somebody generated something and they won some watercolor contest at the state fair. And people said the same thing about airbrush. They also said photography would destroy art. What I think it's going to do is it's probably going to increase the average person's ability to create art in some way. And I kind of think it's a gain, a net gain. And yeah, is it going to ruin? Is it going to change? That's an interesting question. It really is. I don't
Is it
know.
going to wipe out people, artists? They're done. If you can call this up so quickly, it's just crazy.
Yeah, to me, it's more like the cyborg thing is what I point to again. I think the ones who will succeed are the ones who augment it. So if you're a regular artist and you're not using Photoshop, my question would be why? You know, you don't have to make your own pigments. You don't have to act like you're, you know, from the Renaissance or something. You can actually use, I mean, what would Leonardo da Vinci be using today? Photoshop. He would be using generative AI. That's cutting edge, but yeah, it raises some interesting questions, but no, I think overall, I think it's a net gain. And it's a labor saving device. I have a concept for a graphic novel and maybe even a film. And it's helpful that I can take half an hour and generate a storyboard. Like that normally would take hiring people and working with a lot of people. And to me, this makes it more like it's a leveling of the playing field. So I look at this thing as an advantage for people who maybe don't have access to big studios. And when I was in publishing, I used to have to outsource a lot of work to people, to other writers, editors, etc. I've replaced it all with Grammarly and ChatGPT.
What's Grammarly?
Well, Grammarly is something, it's an add-on for grammar checks, spell checker, but it also suggests words, restructures sentences. And recently they have integrated with generative AI, you know, text. So it's like, in addition to rewriting your sentences, it'll offer you new paragraphs. So it's just another one of these areas where, you know, you can gain a cutting edge by embracing the technology and getting ahead of it, knowing it's never going to go away. You know, so AI is not going to replace people, but people who use it are going to replace the people who don't.
Okay, I think I found the screen that you were talking about here. This is the graphic. This is really good. So So how long did it take to create this? This is great. I have to learn how to do this.
Okay, I created this while I was typing to you, asking for the link. And I basically said, I need a realistic penguin recording a podcast with a wizard with the words, quote, fake or real, quote, in the background. And it gave me four versions, and I chose this one because the other ones, the wizard had a beak, which didn't make that much sense.
Oh, this is really cool. Okay, what's the link to this? Where do I go for this to create one of these? This is great.
Okay, you go to bing.com/images/create.
Okay, Bing. Hold on. This is sort of a tech show because Tim is multidimensional, so we can talk about so many different things. So bing.com/create.
Yes. In fact, I'll put a link in the chat as well if anybody else wants to try it.
This is what are there other services like this?
Yeah, this one I use it because it comes through Skype, but there are plenty. Right. You know, I've used many, but this one actually is one of the faster ones. And there you just give it a prompt. You just tell it what to create.
Amazing.
And the trick really is to give it filters, like in the style of like graphic novel, or even make this one, like I said earlier, pixel art. I like doing pixel art.
So in this fact, go ahead.
Oh, I had used this to generate some images, and then I would paint them on canvas and then sell them. So I've actually kind of used this already, you know, to improve my compositions.
Yeah, and you are an artist. So you don't think this is going to put you out of business. You are going to work with this to make your business better without having to sub
one out. Yeah, one of the first ideas I came up with was I will do a oil painting version of your AI generated art. So people might have a vision they're trying to get created as a commission. So if they can create it with any of these, like Midjourney or Bing, and then email it to me, I'll generate it as a painting. And so to me, this is a way of people trying to, you know, bring something from their imagination to real life. And that's kind of cool, considering that people who don't have time to learn how to paint and draw might be able to actually, you know, realize their imaginings.
Yeah, this is really fun. This is good. Okay, this is amazing. Well, I'm going to put this in my arsenal and see if I can work with it, because it's so clear. It's easy. It's fast. I listen to the No Agenda show, and one of the things that they pride themselves on is having their producers, their listeners, create album art on the fly. So at the end of the show, they have customized album art for each episode. But, and I think they've been telling the artists to not use AI, but I think it's a a fruitless request in the end, because you just, it's just too easy.
Yeah, look, yeah, at this point, I think that you, it would be silly to not take it. Like, you're taking advantage of the internet. You're getting high speed internet because you want to compete with the MSM. To not use this is crazy, considering that this is how they're getting such an edge. And I like the idea that you could create a thumbnail for your video in seconds. And it's even getting better now, because now there's you just give it a text prompt and it'll give you video. John LeBond did a video recently about, I guess it was about those turbines and what a waste of money they are. But the entire video was a video, a narrator, and it provided the entire script. So the entire video was completed in a minute after writing a prompt. So that is something, I mean, I don't know exactly what the net long-term effects are, but it's just going to get better.
What website did you use for that? Do you know?
Yeah, I believe it's called, nvidia.ai, nvidia.ai video generator. So it's AI text to video generator. Unleash your imagination. And there are more of these things cropping up every day.
nvidia.ai. Wow. Wait, that's not good.
So you could say, for example, create for
that?
Me.
I think I spelled it wrong.
Yeah, it's IN video dot AI.
Okay, because that brought up a domain parking service.
I see. I'm sorry, it's dot IO.
Okay.
And then the site's called AI, but it's IO. And yeah, turn any idea into content, into video content. So it's beyond just a single image. It will create for you an entire video.
Wow. Do you think some of the future hoaxes are going to use this? Or
they probably already are. I'm pretty sure during the summer of 2020 in Chazistan that a lot of the Antifas that were showing up every single night on the mugshots, I think that those were likely generated from something like thispersondoesnotexist.com. I think they're already using it. In fact, I think ESPN had to admit that most of their sports writers do not exist.
Right. That's crazy. And that's why Sports Illustrated is pretty much gone now. They packed up and shut her down.
Well, and I'm pretty sure that one of the reasons for the ramping up of censorship and the fear of mind viruses and all this stuff is that if a lot of people wanted to, they could severely disrupt the MSM narrative structure with a lot of fake content created fast and just pumped out there faster than people can sift through it. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, this represents an existential threat because they need some kind of cohesion and they don't know what not to believe. And this is one of my main topics as of recently, is that the mainstream believer in all news consumers, they're not really taught to not believe. They just absorb it as real. And this is why it's a threat for misinformation, because they don't chew their food first. They just swallow it all. And it's like, wow, they're vulnerable in a way that we aren't, because we don't automatically believe stuff as skeptics, but they're trained to be non-skeptical. And this is why all this technology is disruptive, potentially.
The mainstream media is going to be dead soon, if it's not dead already. And now we're talking, now I hear words, mainstream alternative media. Are you familiar with that term?
I think David Icke coined that term. I saw him using it, which is interesting. I'm like, because there hasn't been enough criticism within alt media of its own. And somehow it's been grafted onto the political realm of, like, you know, basically Trumpism, which is fine if people want to vote, whatever. I'm just saying it's inconvenient that you have this mass of people who represent alt media who don't have any kind of, you know, uniform perspective. It's a mix. And when you have people like Musk getting in the mix, it's like, how are people falling for Elon Musk? How is he a champion for free speech? He throws out certain canards. He's part of the culture wars, but he's also faking space. In fact, I think he's faking a launch today.
Every day. Wow. Is anyone paying attention? Does anyone care that they're simulating a moon landing? Does it get any buzz at all? Is it on TikTok, I guess, is the question.
You know, before the Challenger explosion, there was not a lot of interest. You know, they were golfing on the moon and nobody cared. It had, like, lost its like it was just not holding their attention. And then the Challenger happened where it exploded. And Reagan came on TV and he said, maybe this was a good thing because we weren't paying attention to space anymore. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, maybe they need to have another space catastrophe pretty soon, because like nobody cares. It's not a big deal anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think even outside truther channels, there was much talk about the so-called moon landing or whatever they said was landing on there. The Atari graphic that landed on the moon and fell over sideways, and they made a little story and they had their clapping when it landed and then fell over to the side. I don't think anyone's paying attention. I wonder. The control room clapping is just so amusing. They're just recycling really, really old stories that I don't know if they're taking at all.
You know, the director of the Apollo mission mm-hmm. wrote a book, like a biography or description of the whole thing. And in his book, he described how in the 60s, they had reached a point of sophistication in their simulations that mm-hmm. the people in the control room would have no way of knowing if it was a simulation or real. They crossed that point back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. So those people in the control rooms who are jumping around and clapping and hugging each other because a rocket went into space, they don't know it's fake. Like there's no way. They're definitely on the outside because the simulation mm-hmm. is perfect. It's a magic show.
Yeah. What's your take now on International Fake Station? Because I've heard you say for a couple of years it's going to come down, and there's a point where the movie simulation is so much better than the NASA simulation. I guess NASA's Hollywood South, so Hollywood West, Los Angeles is creating better space simulation, and they can't release it to interfere with NASA's simulation, that kind of thing.
Sure. For some time I've been talking about the symbolism of it, how it relates to like the Twin Towers. It's this Tower of Babel thing that has to fall. Mm-hmm. But I've been saying that it's largely because its graphics, special effects are terrible, and they're not keeping up with contemporary video games and movies and Netflix. And interestingly, from a Metascript perspective and the numbers, we're always like looking at these connections. And on 119, the movie ISS came out. And 119 has been consistently associated with this notion of the fall of the Tower of Babel, mm-hmm. or the tower or the space station itself, or even like Donnie Darko and planes falling. It's this number that is consistent here. But my point is, on 119, the movie ISS came out, and I went to go review it, and I was taking note of the special effects and how it compares to the quote real thing. Mm-hmm. And I was specifically watching for hair, because on the ISS, the hair, it sticks up with hairspray. You know, that's pretty obvious that they're using hairspray. It doesn't look like hair on a parabolic flight. And I thought, in the movie, if the hair looks more realistic than it does on the space station, we're going to be able to do a side by side and show people. And I had pointed this out before I went. So I go to watch the movie, and guess what? Not one loose hair. The women had their hair slicked back, tied down. They didn't leave it open for criticism.
Smart. Is this worth watching? I don't think I've heard of the movie. Maybe I've heard you say it, but I haven't paid attention. Is this worth watching for anything other than just problems with the shots?
It's a terrible movie.
Okay.
The story is terrible, but you know, it's full of stereotypes and all that stuff, but it's just the world gets nuked and Russia and America are in the space station fighting for control over it. And it's pretty ugly towards the end. But I noticed too that the way they float around looks pretty dumb and fake. Like they deliberately dumbed down the graphics on ISS to not be competitive with NASA.
That's pretty fascinating.
I predicted it. I actually think that I was inadvertently some kind of art director, because they would have listened. They would have listened to the critics in advance. Like, when we release this movie, how are we going to represent the ISS? You know, because there's a point where it would have been a disaster. But no, I think they did it very minimalistic. And even their camera angles. Oh. Like when you film movies in space, people float all around. They restricted how people floated around. I'm really suggesting here they dumbed it down.
Here's some goofs. I always like goofs. I thought that's the best part of IMDb, when it when I first learned of IMDb all this time ago, because I don't usually see goofs when I'm watching a movie. So here we go here. When there are only three crew members left aboard the ISS, one is preparing a sandwich on the counter, on a countertop. The knife, the bread, the avocado spread, and other items remained on the counter instead of floating through the station. Okay.
Microgravity. I think it's microgravity is what they call that.
And at 109, the word Canada on the Canada arm is reversed, showing that the filmmakers flipped the image. That's, wow. How can they make mistakes in movies all this time? Do they just rush it out? Or they don't really have good editors? Or is that deliberate? Makes you wonder. On a movie as important as this, because people are like you and other critics are paying close attention.
Yeah, precisely. In this case, that's kind of interesting too. Yeah, how do these things slip through the editors? And this movie seemed very slapped together. I was not impressed. And if anything, the fact that it came out on 119 and gave us all the imagery of the space station falling tells me that this was just part of the bigger script. This is because my new theory on predictive programming is this. Mm-hmm. And this is the best explanation, I think, so far, because people are like, oh, this is somehow foreshadowing events in the future that they're going to do to you. And they're telling you so that they're not karmically responsible. Revelation of the method. That's right. The usual explanation. But what I'm saying is all propaganda is based on repetition. And if they're going to do something like pull down the space station, well, in order to get you to accept it, they have to show it to you 1,000 times so that when it happens in the news, it's accepted as real. This would explain why we saw so many instances of foreshadowing for the Twin Towers falling. They have to build it in your mind, bore out those neural pathways, and make it real to your subconscious before they make it real in the real world. And so this to me is just more with the 119, fall of the Tower of Babel. It's all tied in there.
It's so you accept it when it happens, so-called in real life. So you're not surprised. You just accept it as, well, you figured it was going to happen because you were told it's going to happen.
Exactly. Exactly.
So it's just, it's conditioning. It's not predictive programming. It's simple mental conditioning.
It is. And then when they release these things, they have contemporaneous movies and films or movie items that, or rather news items that connect with it. So like Leave the World Behind comes out and instantly it's followed by events that seem like they're right out of the movie. You can find many mainstream articles right now saying people are comparing the AT&T blackout to Leave the World Behind. Tesla Roadster recalled 1.6 million of his cars. And they're like, just like Leave the World Behind. Plane parts falling from the sky, planes on fire, just like Leave the World Behind. And that movie is the frame of reference for things happening in the news. And it's been this way for 6 months. Not a coincidence. Just like post 9/11, people were like, it was just like Independence Day. So they use the movies to give you a frame of reference and to program you. It's literally programming.
And did you watch Leave the World Behind? Because I didn't watch that either.
I watched it frame by frame, knowing that everything in that movie was predictive programming, even the soundtrack. And it's pretty ham-fisted. In fact, and this is interesting, Leave the World Behind is an anagram for Behold the End War Live, which is really the main part of the movie is this person, one of the characters going into a bunker and being able to survive the end of the world watching TV.
And do you recommend this movie?
I highly recommend it. Especially if you're a student of predictive programming and autohoaxology, because this is a classic example of predictive programming, also contemporary programming. And the subtext on here tells you quite a bit about how, like, for example, there's a conversation that this character has where he talks about the curve and how if you can read the curve, you can know what's coming in the future. I think he's talking about predictive programming. And then she's talking about how we live in a mass agreed upon delusion, which is very similar to Napoleon Bonaparte or Voltaire, whoever said history is lies agreed upon. Well, media is lies agreed upon. They admit it in this movie. And I think this movie it's very telling about how everything works. I think it's very layered.
So is there anything that they have conditioned us for in this movie that you think might come about this year?
Blackouts. And also, there's a heavy thing here, like the subtext here, they have this oil tanker crashing into the shore, which symbolizes capitalism, oil, climate change, but also it's called the White Lion, which was the name of the first slave ship to hit the American shores in 1619. The emergency broadcast in this movie goes out over 1619. So they're invoking 1619, and there's a thing called the 1619 Project, which says that, no, America didn't start in 1776. Mm-hmm. It began much further back. We're not being inclusive over who really helped build this place before it got born again as defined as this is the starting point. So 1776 is connected with MAGA, nationalism, the right wing. 1619 is the critical race theory perspective of America. So you have left versus right, 1619 versus 1776. It's about a collision of these two worldviews. And Obama produced this movie. And when I say it's ham-fisted, there's a scene, and if you watch it frame by frame, you find all these little Easter eggs where Julia Roberts' character is posing in front of a painting, and the painting is black with all these white lines on it that just happen to look like Klan hoods. So she's standing there wearing a Klan hood. But the movie is very decidedly anti-white, very critical of the white American male, by design, of course, because they're conveying something about, again, this is coming from the critical race theory perspective of America. So I think the bigger picture, it's about, I think, a racial reckoning, the whole BLM movement. So it looks to me like this is a civil war prep.
Yeah, they're still vilifying the white Christian male. That seems to be a predominant theme.
Oh yeah, in this movie, they made the males, the younger males, perverse and sociopathic. The father is ineffectual, weak, ignorant, and bigoted, and doesn't even know it.
Married with Children script.
Oh yeah, 100%.
In the '80s,
100%.
Still going on. It's just annoying. It's just insulting.
It really is. And this programming here is so subtle. Like, there's a scene where a character's wearing a shirt that says "Obey," and then she's wearing NASA. Shirt. So everyone's reading it as "Obey NASA." Mm. Now that's ham-fisted. But when you look at the origin of the Obey design, the guy who designed the Obey shirt with Andre the Giant on it designed Obama's Hope poster. And when I was looking up what's the name of the Obama blackout movie, I found another movie from 2013 that came out on the anniversary of Superstorm Sandy called American Blackout, which had Obama cameo as the president, basically saying, obey the authorities, we're having a big blackout. So anyway, my point of it is Obey, Obama, Hope. It has his fingerprints all over it, and everything about it is agenda and propaganda.
Okay, well, I'll add that to my list of things to watch for sure. Between you and Lynn Ertel, there's always a million movies I have to try and cram in there. It's hard to do research when you're doing a show all the time, isn't it?
Well, I specifically only watch things, you know, for the purposes of deconstructing them, and I find them entertaining anyway. But Leave the World Behind, I specifically think you have to watch because the Obamas are behind it, and because it's just so subtle in its programming. Like, the guy's wearing a shirt that says Bikini Kill, and when I saw the trailer, I thought that's got to be a reference to the nukes, the tests at Bikini Islands. Well, when he's wearing that shirt, this other person says, like, you know, your son could sleep through an atomic bomb. So you have that link. But then moreover, the band Bikini Kill is a feminist band. And I think they would have like gender segregated concerts, all girls up front. But the whole point of it is Bikini Kill's a feminist shirt that he's wearing. And he represents the Ken doll type American male who's totally, you know, a simp and beaten down and ignorant. And anyway, this movie is fascinating because it's a criticism of America coming from the Obama side. And it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I don't think the people that run Washington like America or Americans. I think it's an occupying power.
They certainly don't. They certainly don't. The movie definitely makes that clear because, like, the Kevin Bacon's in the movie and he plays this prepper who knows everything's about to go down, and he's a racist. So they have to throw this stuff in there. And she's, Julia Roberts' character is like pretty much racist, but in a very subliminal way. But on the other side, they have a black character say to her father that if everything continues to go bad, we can't trust people, especially white people.
Right.
Like they specifically say you can't trust white people. Yeah. But then you see Kevin Bacon's character, and he knows in advance something's going down because he's stocking up on water. And I think the implication there is that the blackout is caused by domestic violent extremist white nationalists. So it does seem to be that's the scapegoat in this movie.
Yeah. Always the scapegoat. That's been since Timothy McVeigh, even before maybe, since Oklahoma. That's sort of kicked it off at real time, big time.
And the movie, it has this reference. It keeps showing a poster or a painting of America where it's split into quarters, like an X through it, which has a lot of people referencing the upcoming eclipse. And that is actually a work of art, and I kind of investigated it. And it's just covered in references to various atrocities committed in America. And the movie has a QR code on a map, and it references some carnival built on an Indian burial ground. So the whole movie is an attack basically on America as this colonizing power. But the map of America with the X over, it's interesting. They show it upside down, even state of emergency. But it's kind of a reference to this eclipse, which is creating the X over America here in about a month.
Right.
But in the movie, it shows an eclipse very from the moon. It shows the Earth eclipsing the sun. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, that's some interesting symbolism. But then Matt Perry dies on an eclipse, 10/28. And the movie is all about, well, one character is hyper-focused on friends. And of course, the character Chandler Bing was born on 4/8. So he has a death day on a lunar eclipse. He has a character birthday on the upcoming great eclipse. So there's some connections here that you can make between friends, the Matthew Perry death, the eclipse, the Xing out of America, some kind of civil war thing coming.
Interesting. I'm just on your IP, on your Tim Osmond Substack. Is that different from the IPS Substack? Are there two Substacks? Yeah.
IPS is just archives and live notifications, channel updates, but the timosmond.blog is where I write really the stuff that goes into Autohoaxology. Because I think what we have here, what we're doing, is we are repurposing skepticism in a way it's not used. Like people are non-skeptical when it reaches media, just like they're non-skeptical when they go into religion, when they go into the church. Mm-hmm. And I understand non-skepticism stepping into your church, but non-skepticism when you're looking at the screen, that is inexcusable. It's a philosophical error. It's yourself, your eye, you're being deposed. You're allowing them to think for you. So we're introducing, I think, this new level of skepticism, and it needs to be I think it needs to be articulated and described as a philosophical posture. So I'm writing a lot of articles that go into the nuance of why I reject a certain premise. For example, I've been debating chemtrail people, and they say, well, what are they spraying? Well, that contains two, if not three, logical fallacies. Mm-hmm. Assuming a spray when it could be another effect. It could be hot jet exhaust in cold air.
Yes, I agree.
What are they spraying also implies that it's even a question. Like, for example, if there's a boat leaving a wake, and you say, what are they spraying? Like, that's not even a valid question. You know, it's just like an assumption based on an observation that the thing is a spray or something is being dumped, that it's not just some disturbing of the atmosphere. And then asking the question as though it hasn't been answered or there aren't answers is an appeal to ignorance. And in some instances, it's just not a valid way of advancing an argument, assuming ignorance or assuming it hasn't been investigated thoroughly. So that's kind of a dishonest thing. And then finally shifting the burden of proof to the other person who might not have the answer. So like, I don't know. Well, now it sounds like there's a question when it never was a question. So it's sort of a question asked in bad faith where you're using a question to make the assertion that it's something other than what people think. And these are minor things to some, maybe tedious, but I think it's important if we're trying to reverse engineer psychological operations. And I think most of the mainstream media is held in place by logical fallacies. And if we can break apart those, why not break apart the ones in alt media? And that needs to be done, a cleansing.
Have you written on that topic on chemtrails? Because I get this almost every time I do a show, I get calls on my audio chats. It's a never ending so-called PSYOP, if you want to look at it that way.
I've written about 10 articles on it, and I'm going to do a longer video because I've come up with something here. I think I figured it out. And, you know, I can talk about the misperceptions. Like someone will say it was a clear day, mm-hmm. and then the planes flew over, leaving their trails, and then it rained. Explain that. And I'm like, well, yeah, here's how it works. The conditions required for the formation of persistent trails are the exact conditions required for precipitation like rain. So the trails indicated it's going to rain. They didn't bring the rain. You can use trails to predict the weather conditions. Sailors do this all the time. They're not causing it, but they're actually an effect of pre-existing conditions. But it's easy to make that, you know, A happens before B, so it caused B. It's a, right. It's basically an illusion. And there are many of these types of illusions. But I think the main thing here is people are making this argument without recognizing that, you know, there are real-time weather sites that track conditions that will bring about these trails. So if contrails are predictable and chemtrails are not, then whose theory makes more sense, chemtrail theory or contrail theory?
Where are these writings that you've put, that you've written many times about? Where can we find them?
Oh, at timosmond.blog.
Okay,
and what I'm bringing up here are just, if you can advance the argument without having to rely on loaded questions or ignoring huge bodies of evidence. But then the question is why? Well, one, I think they need people to be in a state of fear. And then two, conspiracy theorists and people on the right don't believe in climate change. They don't believe that the private sector and fossil fuels are screwing up the earth, but they believe that chemtrails are. So they both accept the premise that man can wreck the earth, that man can change the climate. And I don't believe that. I think they need us to believe that. And so they've tricked the people who don't believe in climate change into believing in climate change by another name. They just call it geoengineering, which ironically is actually a climate change term. Climate change believers say, when we remediate climate change or try to fix it or reduce CO2, that's geoengineering. So the term geoengineering isn't what the conspiracy theorists think it is. It's not a weather weapon thing. My point of it is they're in agreement with Greta. And I think that was the point of the PSYOP.
I'm looking through the page here. Is it anywhere in particular? Because I would like to link to it. Or do you think?
Yes. Yes. Actually, if you're read off some of the titles of these articles here, you can even use the search function and hit chemtrails. But some of the titles I would point out.
Yeah, I found it now because I had to open up more deep, more from December, I believe. So you got two here. The Chemtrail Truthers Jedi Mind Tricks Explained.
That's a good one. That's one I would highly recommend. Yes.
Okay, because I've really told people that if you want my take on chemtrails, just take a listen to Tim Osmond. Okay, that's a paid article I see, huh?
Yeah, what I'll probably do is I'll be unpaywalling all of them in the form of an ebook, which I'll read and I'll provide graphics. I'm going to do a video on this because I think here's the reason why I think this is important. I think truthers have fallen for a PSYOP, and I think that the ones who cling to it are going to reveal themselves as triggered believers who aren't ready to embrace skepticism and becoming disentangled emotionally from the Psy War. So that's what I mean. I think that what we're doing, analyzing media critically, means that we also have to recognize when we're wrong. And I recognize, look, I didn't know what they were. I was always skeptical, but I'm like, I don't know what's in the exhaust. I don't know why it stays. But the more I saw that this was a very persistent, seemed like almost like this was a way to shoehorn in people into not only an alternative to chemtrail belief, but I think this might also be a way to filter in all out-of-the-box thinkers into the conspiracy tent, into Trutherville, which is very much a gate-kept community. So how do you get people who don't go with the establishment view of climate change, who are kind of wandering off the map here, how do you get them under your control? You give them an alternative. And what do they scapegoat? They scapegoat government. Right wing will say, oh yeah, it's the government doing it, secret government projects. Left says it's the private sector, it's capitalism messing up the earth. Right. So they have their own, it's a bifurcated PSYOP, like all of them. It's split down the middle.
Yeah, you call it hashtag skyphobia.
And yes.
This is under your auto hoaxology 101 series.
Yes. And if it's a legitimate fact, you don't need to use logical fallacies to get people to believe it. And that's one of the points to this, is that this is a great example of how you can accept a premise without realizing it's been smuggled in there. And I just want to make people aware that when you ask, what are you spraying, you're actually implying, shifting the burden of proof, and ignoring a body of evidence. It would be like this. This is one of my best, I think, analogies here. A group of people walk through the woods and they see some trees where the bark has been rubbed off. And one guy there believes in Bigfoot. And he's like, yeah, that's a Bigfoot, a Bigfoot trail marking his territory. And so now you look at these rubbings and you say, these are Bigfoot's rubbings. But then some park ranger comes along and he says, no, that's a buck rubbing. The deer did that. And then they're like, no, you're just from the government. You're trying to cover up Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
So they're deliberately misinterpreting a natural phenomenon that's well understood and ascribing to it a cause that they have no evidence for, and then refusing to acknowledge that the quote experts aren't actually lying this time.
Yeah, I get a lot of people. I'm just looking in the chat here. Many people think that the chemtrails are to obscure the sun and block out the sun. That's a big one. And where I live in Toronto, I work around the airport, so I look at all the planes. I'm underneath the runway, so I can smell the exhaust. It does stink. It is toxic. I don't think there's any doubt about that. It stinks, and I'm sure if you're breathing it in all day long at the airport, it's no good for you, because there is no exhaust cleaning on planes. It just goes straight out. Well, unlike trucks, where we have massive, expensive devices that I have to pay for, by the way, that cost a fortune to run and they break all the time, that do clean the soot out of the diesel air. But my point is that the weather in Toronto is on the Gulf Stream, so it changes so quickly. There's no way a plane or two is changing the weather. It's just dramatic.
Okay, let's say planes do go over, and it results in these long trails, which is basically just ice, you know, cirrus clouds. These are anthropogenic cirrus clouds. But under the right conditions, they will spread out and linger for hours, and they might build up and accumulate. And they'll say, yeah, that's blocking the sun. I'm like, is it? Because the premise behind climate change is that our CO2 use is causing the weather globally to change. And are they actually arguing that airplanes are altering the weather? And if so, I just want them to realize that they're on the same sheet as Greta Thunberg. And once you accept the premise that man can start altering the weather, you're agreeing with the WEF that man's a problem, we got to regulate more. And that's what I think the long game is. They love these big lies, and they get you to fight over little tiny lies all day long, as long as you accept the big one. And I think the big lie is that man can alter the climate.
Yeah, I don't believe that. On a macro scale, no, I don't believe that at all. Where are you on Mandela? I remember you saying months ago you're going to do a book on Mandela. Are you still interested in that?
100%. 100%. I've been revisiting the Mandela effect, and I think this is a great time to bring up another aspect of the Psy War, which has to do with gaslighting. And I also, before we actually produce it, I want to do an interview with somebody who's doing interrogations. Because I think what causes the Mandela effect is not altering the media and creating a mass misperception. A Mandela effect is quite literally caused by an imagination prompt from a tainted witness / interrogator, and retroactive interference of whatever memories are recalled. And then, of course, only applying in any one of these Mandela effects, like two options. So it's always a binary that they apply. There's three versions of this logo, or five versions. Which one do you remember? It's always A or B. And if reality is fluid, it's not going to be confined into an A or B binary choice. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is they're using a technique of getting someone to recall something that they know, but also simultaneously imagining an alternate. And once they have you there, then you could easily have one weigh as much as the other, and then cognitive bias will fill in the rest. So what I'm saying is they are creating false memories. It's false memory syndrome is a thing. And I know it's a thing because many people have been locked up in prison for faulty eyewitness testimony are victims of this. The police ask questions in such a way that allow them to kind of get somebody to recall something, a detail. It's basically, it's gaslighting, getting them to doubt their perceptions, and then planting a suggestion. It's actually kind of nefarious.
Yeah, I think, is it you that was talking about the interviewing techniques of police when they get somebody in that room?
Yes, and that's why I want to talk to an actual police officer as part of this, because I think it speaks to the power of media and contextualizing information. So like, people believe stuff on the news because it's a limited context and there's nothing outside of it. And they don't have an opt-out. Like, they don't recognize that there's an opt-out. And with the Mandela effect, it's A or B. There's no, I don't remember. So it's a binary. If there was an opt-out, it might be more legitimate. But what they do is they force you into going with the normieville and being a zombie, or going with the people who have jumped dimensions and are waking up. One has a community attached, one doesn't. And if you're already in Trutherville, your bias is going to be towards those who've seen through the matrix. So I think it also has a very compelling cult-like appeal. And it does. It's a huge social gathering, a lot of social reinforcement. So I would say the Mandela effect did constitute something of a cult, a new age cult built around a miracle. And like all miracles, it's fake.
Okay, Napoleon is putting our phone numbers in the chat, so you can call in if you want to catch Tim before he leaves, because we've been going about an hour and I don't want to keep him too much longer. So 810-666-1984 or 902-400-1984 or Skype, Fakeologist, or on Discord, wherever you want to reach us, give us a holler.
Yeah, and one more point here. The reason why I'm aiming the think tank's turret at the Mandela effect, at chemtrails, at gematria calculators, at false flag theories, is that we have to attack the orthodoxies, the cliches, or the misconceptions in Trutherville first before we can go after the mainstream media. Because as it is, the citizenry of Trutherville are in no condition to go after the mainstream. They're too incoherent. And so what we're doing is we're offering a purification phase. And then I think we'll be in a better position. But it's a mess, and I'm just doing this with the best of intentions.
Yeah, there are all the conspiracies that the movies pick up on and the general population pick up on, and it makes people in our line of thinking look bad and discredits us, I think.
Exactly. So I'm like, let's leave behind the QAnon hopefuls with their hopium addictions. Let's just drive on past that. And I think what we can do is really create a self-aware demographic of people who have just stepped one step further away from alt media than the people who are just immersed in it. Because there needs to be an alternative to alt media. And really, it's the community here. This is really it, because it begins with real skepticism.
I agree. Yeah, you've been doing good work, and I'll have to start tuning in again, because now that you're back, you were off for a while, but now you're back on the regular, so your archives show up in Odyssey, which creates an RSS feed that I can pull into my podcast player, so your episodes just show up automatically. So that's the main way I receive your transmission.
Awesome. Well, it was definitely good catching up tonight. We should definitely do this again. And in the future, and yeah, I'll be producing more content, and so I'm sure we'll be in touch more. And I think this is gonna be an interesting year. Today's 3-3 again, so I don't know if any major psyops have gone off today, but it would be
me neither. You gotta wait till tomorrow to see what we missed today if you're busy doing a show. So yeah, we'll keep so the best place to find you is just go to IPS Monster and then just follow all the links from there, or is there somewhere else?
That's the best one. I mean, it's, you know, infiniteplanetsociety.com is long, but ips.monster is easy.
Yeah.
And the word monster, it's kind of our mission statement. It's about metastasizing what we're doing, like Godzilla, you know, Kraken rising from the abyss. The demographic of skeptics becoming self-aware will be a monster when we reach a certain point. So thanks again for the call and hanging out with the chat here.
Yeah, thank you for bringing all, I really enjoy the technology angle of what you do as well. So thanks for pushing the borders and the limits and showing all these other websites. I don't know if I can put energy in a Substack, but if you say it's really generating content, and if you say Spotify is working for you, then I'll take a second look, because we can all use more people. We need to get people into the echo chamber because we do speak a lot to ourselves, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you jumped on Substack and you imported one of your blogs, even if you just did it once a week, I think you would draw a lot of people from within the Substack community itself as well. So we'll talk soon.
Yeah, people seem to stay on their plantations. They don't like to go off. All right, Tim, thanks so much for joining. I really appreciate it. And when's your next transmission?
Likely in about an hour. I'll open up for phones.
Oh, wow. Okay, so if you want to move on to Tim's platform, go to IPS Monster and follow all the links and spread the word. Okay, thanks, Tim.
Thanks. See ya.
All right, there goes Tim Osman, Auto Hoaxology 101 and IPS.Monster. He has a big audience. He has a big Discord think tank. Everyone needs to go sub up with him. There aren't too many people like Tim that do his work. There's quite a bit of crossover with the fakeologist community. I really enjoy the technology. Now I'm going to try and start generating some of this AI content, maybe with video, maybe with graphic, but it's very, very interesting to say the least. So I find it fascinating. All right, so that's it for today. Tomorrow we'll be doing our vaccine injury show, allshotsclot.com. That's my sub blog. So if you want to go over there, if you want to set up your phone lines or check out my phone lines to call in and set up any stories you have, that's what we do on Mondays. And we'll just play some videos and take some calls and see what you have to say. I really appreciate anyone calling in with their stories. I don't know. I still think that these things cause damage. It's still going on, although it seems to be winding down a lot. But I just read that we're up to shot number 9 that can't be helping and only hurting. So that's tomorrow around 8 o'clock. We do that for about an hour. So if anyone wants to call in, you've got the phone numbers at fakeologist.com or allshotsclot.com. That's it. If this is value for value, as I've said before, if you like this show, you pay whatever you want. We don't have any paywalls. So you just pay whatever you think this show is worth. We have audios, thousands of hours of audios. I think we generated about 15 hours on the weekend at fakeologist.com/podcasts, audio chats. And that's people like you calling in. They go to the Discord at fake11.com/Discord. And we had some new voices, one even from Toronto, Baklava. A young guy who is really with it, really understands. So fakeologist.com/donate. You don't need an account to make a donation through DonorBox. You just need a credit card. And you can donate as little as $1 a month to help pay for the infrastructure and show your support. If you don't have any money, just send me an email at ima@fakeologist.com and I will read your emails on those shows and just let me know that you're listening, because even with the statistics, it really doesn't indicate if anyone's listening. Downloads don't equate to listens. I really want to hear from people and let me know if they want to keep this going. And if you have any guest suggestions, I do have the regulars like Tim Osman. That is always really interesting. And we'll just keep recirculating those content creators and promoting their work. But if you have anyone you think I should talk to, let me know. Otherwise, have a good night, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.